Well, about this time last year, Becky and I had the chance to go to on a trip to Greece and Italy, and it wasn't a mission trip. No, it wasn't a mission trip at all, but it was a vacation kind of a trip, and about now, we were in the Sistine Chapel in Rome. And perhaps you've heard of the Sistine Chapel before, maybe you haven't, but it is perhaps the crowning work, the crowning of achievement of a particular painter who's called one of the best painters of all time. Once you see the Sistine Chapel, there is no dispute. Michelangelo is the best painter of all time. But we got into the Sistine Chapel earlier in the morning, and it's part of the whole Vatican complex in Rome, and we walk into this chapel, and it is, if you'll go to the next slide here, we walk into the chapel, and it's not particularly big, and it's completely saturated and covered with the most exquisite art that you've ever seen. Incredible. And you look up, and it's hard to look up because you're, although it's more convenient to look up because you're packed in like a sardine with so many different people. But as you look up, the every single piece of this is a Bible story, and it's a, you know, on that back wall, you see the final judgment. That's what that is on the back wall. But if you'll go to the next slide, it starts out here with the creation narrative, God creating Adam. And then goes from there, through different Bible studies, the fall stories, and then you have the fall. The next slide is David and Goliath, extraordinary. It's in a little small fresco area. And then from there, you have, go to the next one. From there, this is Jeremiah, the prophet, and there's prophets that are musing and writing all around you, and they are almost alive. It's extraordinary. Then the next one, that's the center of the final judgment that Michelangelo paints, and it was truly extraordinary. You look at this artwork, and you think, this is exceptional. It's a masterpiece. But if you take the time to reflect on and know more about the story of the painting, I mean, honestly, think about this. You're painting looking straight up in a very high, small chapel. And if you think about the story of how all this came to be, all of the artwork, as exquisite as it is, it becomes even more incredible if you know the depth of the story, if you take the time to reflect on the depth of the story. That's what I want to challenge us to do this morning with this Passion Week, is that as we head into Easter, as we head toward Good Friday and then Resurrection Sunday, which is really what that is, instead of Easter, it would be Resurrection Sunday. With that, if you and I take the time to reflect and to look in what exactly into what is going on there and why, then those things will simply explode with meaning and power. They will explode with meaning and power. So today is Palm Sunday. Today, as I prayed before, is the time when we remember that Jesus rode into Jerusalem as a king. We call it the triumphal entry. Perhaps we would like to view it as somehow that Jesus is riding into Jerusalem as a hero, but he's not. He's riding into Jerusalem as a servant because it's who he is. And it is God's solution to the human problem. He rides into Jerusalem to great fanfare. People are waving palm branches, which are a symbol of Jewish nationalism. This kind of processional is also something that's normal for a hero coming in from a great victory. But they're laying these branches down before Jesus. He's riding in on a donkey. It's not impressive. But people are shouting and shouting and shouting. And then, honestly, that's honestly a week before, or actually less than a week before, everything goes south. On Thursday night, he will be arrested. On Friday, he will be killed. He will be killed on the cross. On Sunday, he will rise from the dead. Historical fact. These things have happened for a particular reason. And I guess the question that I want to ask this morning and the question that I want to answer is, why? Why do all of this? If you're God, can't you just snap your fingers and kind of make everybody right with you? Can't you snap your fingers and breathe on creation and make it so that all of us are right with you? And apparently the answer to that question is no. No, in fact, there's a lot underneath all of that is going on. And I want to explore this morning with you one particular facet of what is going on. And I think that it would be the dominant narrative of what's going on from God's point of view, but really important. And I think that we could easily miss it. And what's happening here during this week is Jesus is working redemption. Redemption. When we think of that word redemption, I don't know, maybe perhaps you think of the same thing. I think of, you know, redemption center is a place where you bring your recycling goods, you know, and you bring your cans and you get money back for your cans. But that is not it. That is not what's going on with God on the cross, with Jesus on the cross. So what I want to explore with you this morning is why did Jesus die and what did it accomplish? And in sum, what we'll see is that through his death, God is working redemption. That is, he is bringing us back into his family. So I want to ask you to reflect on these things this week, and you'll understand why as we get through this. So why did Jesus die? Why did Jesus suffer? It was to redeem us. Redemption, redeem, those are the same concept. And the process of, and the concept of redemption comes from the Old Testament. It literally means bringing someone back into the family. Bringing someone back in the family that has been lost to the family. So you see this terminology throughout the New Testament. It's in your bulletin insert. Do you have a bulletin insert, right? You do? I got it. Actually, yesterday I finished it, and I sent it to myself. You ever do that? Like, I sent it to myself. I thought, oh, it's all done. And then they texted me this morning, oh, we didn't get an insert. So I'm glad that you have one. Redemption is family business. It's family business. The Apostle Paul says to his spiritual son Titus, he says that Jesus gave himself to redeem us from all wickedness or lawlessness and to purify for himself a people that are his very own. A people that are his very own, eager to do what is good. Redemption is a concept that in the New Testament it's amplified, but it's a very, very ancient concept. And it has a number of different prongs to it, but basically what it comes back to is an ancient family. In ancient cultures, tribes were the primary unit. And underneath the tribes, there were families in that tribes, but the tribe was, if you will, led by a patriarch. The senior alpha male leads the tribe. He is a patriarch. And that patriarch is responsible for pretty much everything that goes on in the tribe. If some justice needs to be meted out, the patriarch is responsible for that. If someone needs protection, he's responsible for that. The patriarch is the primary caregiver of the entire tribe. And that patriarch in the family is the one who is, well, in a Jewish family, he's the one who is basically the one that keeps everything together. Now, a Jewish family within the patriarchal system, especially around the time of Jesus, is basically located under one roof. That in a Jerusalem type or in a house around that general area, you would have a four-room house with a courtyard where the animals would be, and numerous family members would be in that house. You would have the patriarch and his family, and then all the sons and their family and their kids in there, and it's a giant festival of family. And if you go to the Middle East at this point in time, this kind of stuff is still very much in the standard norm of how they do live. The family is primary. The patriarch is over the family. And if someone is in that family, they are in what is called the father's house. The patriarch is the father, and the people that are in that family are in the father's house. And if someone is lost to that family, then they are not in the father's house. But this is how Jesus talks about it there in John 14 of what we're asked you to turn. In John 14, 2, it says that Jesus is speaking to his disciples. He says, my father's house, that's this unit, has many rooms. If it were not so, would I have not told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go there to prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. Now, over the years, this particular verse has been used to kind of talk about our mansion in the sky and heaven and what that's going to be, and I got a mansion waiting for me. But that's not what Jesus is saying here. What Jesus is saying here is he is going to bring us back into the Father's household. He's going to bring, through this work of redemption, he's going to bring us back into the family of God. And then once we are in that family of God, then all of the Father's care, all the Father's protection, all the Father's resources, those now become ours inside the Jewish, it was called the Beit Av. It's the Father's household. And all those things are yours if you're in the household, and they are not if you are not. Now, the reason why this is important is because if you're not in a family in the Middle East, you're cooked. You're destitute. And so, therefore, the law of God in the Old Testament talks frequently about taking care of widows and orphans because they're people that are outside of the Father's house. And he says, don't forget them. Bring them back in. Care for them, the widow, the orphan, the foreigner. All of this, and this is the first blank in your bulletin, this work of redemption is all about bringing you and I back into God's loving, growing, imperfect, and wonderful family. This is family business, folks. It's family business. That's what Jesus is doing. Everything that is going on this week, all of these Holy Week activities, all of this suffering, all the things that Jesus says, they're all about bringing you back into his household. Now, I have a quite wonderful family. I like talking about them. But we have this in our living room. Those of you who have been to step one, you have seen it. We have this big U-shaped couch in our living room. And the big U-shaped couch is the place where we connect. A lot of times people connect around the dinner table, and we do that as well. But we connect around this couch, and you know, we've got two pastors and two therapists and a number of medical professionals and all kinds of things. We're super self-realized, okay? So we around that couch, that's where things get raw. And there's lots of razzing that goes on and great fun banter. And then somebody will let down their guard and something that's really difficult they're going through. They start to share. Their guard is down. They cry. People rally to them. Then somebody says, after they've had a chance to process what's going on with them, well, can we pray for you? And then we as a branch family are kind of like a big pile of puppies. We all kind of lay on each other and lay on the person who's getting prayer. And they get prayer and they get so much love. It's incredible. Honestly, it's incredible. Every once in a while, what ends up happening is a friend, one of the kids invites a friend to be a part of that. And they don't, you know, lie on the pile of puppies like the rest of the branches do, but they kind of are hovering around the side. And at the end of the time, when they're about to leave, most of them have said something to this effect: "What just happened? What in the world was that? Whatever it is, I want more of that. That did something to me. That family did something to me." That sense of connection, whatever I have to do to get adopted into this family, I'm willing to do it. How much do I have to pay? And I just have to say, well, you just happen to be at the right place at the right time, but this is how branches, this is how we share family. Now, I want to say to you this, that as good as that is for the branches, your Father in Heaven's family and being in his family is even better. That it's the place where he has his hands all over you. It's raw, it's real, it's imperfect. There's all kinds of brokenness, but there's so much connection, so much beauty in the connection, so much love, so much warmth, so much touch. And in the ancient world, being without those things was to die. And this work that Jesus is executing on the cross is all intended to bring you and I to come down and get us and wrap us in his arms and to bring us into the Father's household. And it is in the ancient Old Testament context, it is the patriarch's responsibility to go and rescue a family member that has been lost to the family. And that is what is going on. That is what is going on in Jesus. Is the patriarch here, God, is taking the responsibility and putting his resources on the line, the lifeblood of his own son, to come and get you and bring you back to the family. This is what is happening as Jesus is going through all these things. Does that make sense to you? This is really important. That this is the work of redemption, to go and get those who are outside the family and bring them into the family, and then help those who are in the family to experience the family and all the beautiful and wonderfulness of it. And so John so beautifully records this in his first epistle. He says, see what great love the Father has lavished on us? He didn't sort of just kind of drip the love, you know, kind of say, oh, you have a little bit of love here and a little bit of love. No, we're talking about lavishing love, how much love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. That's what we are. Children of God, inside the household of God, inside of the Father's house. And so when a family member is lost to the fam, it is the patriarch's duty and responsibility to go after them. And that is what Jesus is doing on the Father's errand. He is coming after us. He is coming to get us, to rescue us. He is coming to redeem us. Redeeming is to take someone that is outside the family, pay whatever price needs to be paid, and bring them back in. Now I want to take the rest of our time that we have and explore just the three reasons, at least, why in the Old Testament, why we would need to be redeemed. Why is it that someone would need to have somebody go and get them, someone pay an incredible price, someone put their own resources on the line to ransom someone back? Why would they need to do that? And there are three pictures basically in the Old Testament that summarize this movement on God's behalf or by God to rescue you and bring you into his very own family. The predicaments that we have, if you will, are that we're in poverty, we're in bondage, or we're in sin. And so I want to take those apart, and I'm borrowing heavily from scholar Sandra Richter on this in terms of language, because she's just done a beautiful job in her work, The Epic of Eden. But I want to say this, and I'll say this a number of different times, so that this kind of gets drilled into us, but the Father is redeeming you and I in Jesus. That is, he's taking responsibility, putting his own resources on the line to ransom a family member. To ransom a family member. And we've got some kind of cell phone thing that's going on over here. To ransom a family member. And that is, in this first particular case, those who, due to crippling life circumstances, were lost to the family and must be redeemed out of poverty. That's the first reason. In ancient times, just like now, you could get yourself in a significant amount of financial trouble. Would you agree that you can get yourself into financial trouble now? Not difficult. And for those of you youngins, this is a ever-present thing for us, is that money, you know, a lot of people would say money makes the world go round. But in the ancient times, it was very similar in that you could get yourself in trouble financially and be indebted. You could be a woman and marry off into a family, and then your husband dies, and now what do you do? You could be in all kinds of different situations where you are indebted and have no way to pay that debt back. And so you could actually sell your life to be able to pay that debt. And then you are a slave or an indentured servant. And the patriarch who has a family member who has fallen into those kind of circumstances would say, I got to go after that person. I've got to go pay whatever price it is to pay them and to pull them out of that poverty, to bring them back into the Beit Av, into my family unit. And he's going to go after them to be able to do this. In fact, this is the story of Ruth and Boaz. If you want to go back this week and look at that, the reason why I haven't told it is because there's a lot of technicalities to it that make it a little bit more difficult to tell in a public setting in one shot. But Ruth and Boaz, this is exactly what's happened, Ruth and Naomi and Boaz have all, Boaz is actually going to redeem them. He's a family member, an alpha, who is going to redeem a person and bring them back into the family. But this is what God is doing in Christ. Now, I would say this, in our very wealthy, very rich society that we have, poverty is not something that we're unfamiliar with. We might be unfamiliar with the lack of personal goods, but emptiness and personal and inward poverty, I find people in this spot all the time. I find people that are in this spot where they're surrounded by all kinds of toys, all kinds of success, and they're completely empty inside. Our society would say to us, you know, that if you have more things, that you're going to be happier. But unfortunately, the people that have the most things are not the happiest. In fact, in that people group, there's a lot of people that end up taking their lives because obviously filling your life with more things does not make your life more full. And you and I are actually in a beautiful way spoken of in the New Testament that it talks about our empty way of life without God, our impoverished way of life without God. And one of the things that Jesus is doing in this redemption picture is he is coming to take us out of our poverty and bring us into his riches. The New Testament even says that Jesus himself, though he be rich, gave himself to, he became poor so that you, through him, you and I could become rich. That's not a promise of prosperity or the prosperity gospel. It's a promise of riches in relationship with God. And this is what Jesus is doing on the cross. He says, I see you Americans. You have all kinds of stuff and you're completely bankrupt. You're completely impoverished. And I'm coming to get you. No, I'm not coming to get you in that weird bad way. I'm coming to rescue you. I'm coming to rescue you from an empty way of life. I'm coming to rescue you out of poverty. So remember, the patriarch who is God here is taking responsibility to come after us. And at putting his own resources on the line, his own son's life, to come and get you and to bring you out of poverty and into his family. That's the first thing. The second picture comes from Genesis chapter 14. That is to say that in redemption, that God is taking responsibility, putting his own resources on the line to ransom a family member, those seized by an enemy against whom they have no defense. They need to be redeemed from bondage. And you see this language throughout the New Testament, and especially in the work of Jesus, that he's delivering people, he's healing people, he's restoring relationships. The way that John summarizes it in 1 John is he says, the reason why Jesus came was to destroy the works of the devil. The one who binds us, he came actually to destroy that work. And that is indeed what is going on the cross in Jesus, is that he is redeeming us out of bondage. Now, perhaps you remember this story from Genesis 14, but Abraham, the father of the people of Israel, the patriarch, the first one, basically he has a nephew, his name is Lot. I wouldn't recommend that name for your kid, but Lot... And Abraham, the father's house, the Bet Av, is so big that Abraham says, why don't we split up? And you decide what land you want to take. Lot chooses the Jordan River Valley. That's where Sodom and Gomorrah are. Lot goes there, settles there, and after a period of time, a coalition of kings attacks that valley, seizes Lot and all of his possessions, and hauls them off, you know, as slaves. Abraham hears about this, and he says, you know, we've got to do something about that. So he gets all of his family members who are able warriors, about 314, which is a quite a bit for your just under your one household. 314 warriors and a bunch of other sheiks and other leaders from different tribes around, and they go and they pursue the one who has enslaved Lot, and they overtake them, they go to battle, they conquer, and they rescue Lot. Abraham puts his own self as a warrior, as a patriarch, and his household, he puts all of their lives on the line to go and redeem Lot out of this bondage. Does that make sense? And so this is one of the large images that the New Testament uses on this. Listen to what Peter says. I'm sorry, no, I'm getting ahead of myself here. This is what Jesus is doing. This is what was prophesied at the beginning of Genesis. That someone was coming, that God was sending, that would crush the serpent's head. And this is who that is. This is Jesus. He is the bondage breaker. He's the one who brings freedom. But I don't know if you've noticed, but we're pretty bound up. Don't you think? In America, pretty bound up. I mean, when I think of bondage, well, this is fairly common in an American type of, but we're not being hauled off by a foreign army, but there's a lot of you in this room that are in bondage to pornography, male and female. There are people in this room that are in bondage to prescription drugs and pain meds, opioids, methadone, fentanyl. There are those in this room that are in bondage to eating disorders on both sides of the spectrum, less and more. There are those of us in this room that are in bondage to anxiety and fear and are crippled by it. There are those of us in this room that are in bondage to all manner of good things that have become ultimate things, and they have enslaved us. Binge watching. Some of you are like so committed to binge watching that you don't even know what to do yourself if you're not binge watching. We're a bound up people. And Jesus has come. Jesus has suffered and died to break the power of those things that bind us. He is the bondage breaker. Redemption is breaking us, breaking the bondage and bringing us back into the family. That's the second thing. So the first thing is the patriarch God takes on responsibility, puts his own resources at the line to bring us out of poverty, to bring us out of bondage. And the third one is that third one is dealing not with the stuff that's outside of us, but the stuff that's inside of us. And that is that the patriarch, who is God, takes responsibility and puts his own resources on the line to free and to bring back into family those who find themselves enslaved to the consequences of a faithless life. That is that we need to be redeemed from sin. And this story that illustrates this in the Old Testament is a truly interesting one. It's the prophet Hosea. If you haven't read it, I'd encourage you to go back and read the story. It's a very curious one. Hosea is a man of repute, a prophet of God, and God has been looking at the people of Israel and their unfaithfulness to him, and he sees it as a husband and an unfaithful bride. That's how he sees the hearts of the Israelites at that point in time. And so instead of God giving Hosea a message to speak, he gives Hosea a message to enact. And he says, I want you to go down to the local brothel. And so Hosea goes down to the local brothel, and he picks a woman there, and he brings her home as his wife. Now, can you imagine the headlines in this? Imagine the headlines, you know, the social media headlines would say, you know, something like, man of God goes to brothel, comes home with wife. You know, what? Comes home with a wife. She has instantly been taken from, and because nobody is born thinking this is what I want to do for a living. So she's got redemption and lift all over her and this whole thing. She bears him not one, not two, but three sons. This is a huge blessing for her. But you can take someone out of slavery, but you can't always take slavery out of them. And it says that she goes off, and she actually finally, after all this blessing, she leaves Hosea. She gives herself back into the lifestyle that she had before. And the story picks up in chapter 3 where she's at the city gate ready to be auctioned off to the highest bidder into slavery to pay her debts. And the Lord speaks to Hosea, her brokenhearted husband. And he says, I want you to buy her back. And he does it. And this is redemption. This is redemption. He buys, his wife's name is Gomer, another not one to name your child. But he buys her back. And as drastic as that is, this is what's going on in the suffering and death of Jesus on the cross. He's buying you and I back from the consequences of our faithless life, of our sin. He's buying us back. Interestingly enough, he buys her back for some really minuscule amount because she's worthless to everyone else, but not to him. The way that Peter summarizes this is beautiful. He says, you know, that it was not with perishable things, such as silver or gold, that you were redeemed, that you were bought back into the family household from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but with the precious blood of Christ. The precious blood of Christ. So at great personal cost, God sends his Son. His Son takes on flesh, brings the kingdom of God, but knows that this is going to culminate, this work of redemption is going to culminate in the suffering and death of his son. And when Jesus gives his life, that price that's going to be paid is going to buy us back out of sin. But we're not just bought out of sin, just, you know, scot-free. We're bought out of sin into family, into God's family, into his intimacy, where we get to enjoy the things of God, where we get to know him, where we get to be a part of people's, other people's lives that have been redeemed like us, where we get to share and connect and love, and it's imperfect and it's beautiful. It's imperfect and it's beautiful. But God is buying us back through this work of Christ, and he is buying us back out of sin. And sin, for those of you that might be unfamiliar with this concept, sin is both the bad things that we do and the reason that we do them. I've used often the term for that Frank Sinatra described it so well. I did it my way. That it is that thing inside the human heart that says, I will be my own God. I will be the master of my own ship. And that is the reason why we do bad things, is because of this innate sin inside of us. It is both by choice and by nature. And so the way that Isaiah summarizes this is, he says, surely the arm of the Lord is not too short to save. It's not like God can't get to you, nor is his ear dull to hear, but your iniquities have separated you from your God, alienated us, caused us to be lost to his family, caused a hardness to come in our heart, a waywardness. And so these are the reasons why Jesus has come. Jesus has suffered. Jesus has died for you. He came to grab a hold of you. And I want to, these words are actually really important in terms of what God did in redemption. I've said over and over again that he has taken responsibility. That is to say that you and I were not showing any signs of promise. He didn't look out and say, look at those people. I think Jill's actually probably a pretty good person to die for because, well, she's just nicer than the rest of the human race. Well, she is that. But the reality is that none of us were showing any progress, any leaning toward God. None of us were. It simply was not there inside of us. The scripture talks about this frequently, that inside of us there's nothing that would even want God, but God wanted us. And he took responsibility. He took the responsibility all upon himself. He didn't take responsibility and say, hey, I'm going to partner with you human beings if you're just good enough. No, he took all the responsibility himself on himself to be able to pay the price, to be able to redeem you and I out of slavery. In fact, if you think about it, slaves don't really get to contribute to how they're redeemed out of slavery. They don't. They're just simply redeemed. He's taken responsibility. He has put his own resources on the line in this particular case. It's his son. And it's not just his son. It's his son's life and his blood. My son Daniel is here today. My firstborn. If it were up to, you know, if I had to choose between your life and his and spill his blood so that you could be preserved, you'd be toast in a heartbeat. I love him with my whole heart. You would be toast. You'd be like, well, okay, you or Daniel. Sorry. It's Daniel. Every time. 100% of the time. But God, not so. He put his own resources on the line. He put the one that he loves the most. And he offered him to us, to buy us out of poverty, to buy us out of bondage, to buy us out of sin and the consequences therein. This is the best news ever. This is the good news, that this is what God has done. And you didn't lift a finger. And what's interesting to me, meltingly so, is that when the Lord looks down at you and me and the predicaments and what's wrong with us, What he says is the solution that you need is to be back in his family. That's the solution. And so the redemption process is all about getting you back in the family. When you're in his family, when you're in his circle, when you're intimate with him, he gets to put his fingers all over you and to make you into the best version of yourself. When he gets to do that, he gets to show off his work by molding and shaping you and then showing you to the world, showing his work to the world. He gets to show his love to you by, with the hands and the feet and the love and the warmth of other people loving you like he loves you, by being a part of a family. And I want to tell you folks that this is not an American thing. This is a kingdom of heaven thing. In America, we are so privatized, so individualized. It's like, how, you mean, this isn't about me getting a mansion in heaven? No, it's not about you getting a mansion in heaven. It's about you getting a place in Father's house. It's about you being in the family of God forever. Forever. And being in the intimate fellowship of the Lord, of the Father, Son, and Spirit forever. And this is what has been bought for you and I. This is what is going on this week. This is what we are remembering. This is what we are celebrating. That this is what God has done. And he wants us to be responsive to him in that. This is love. Not that we loved him, but that he loved us and gave his life to ransom us. This is love. You've been loved. Your Father wants you back. I think of Luke 15, just in sliding into home here. Luke 15, the prodigal son, the parable of the lost coin, the parable of the lost sheep, three other different ways of describing why you and I need redeeming. A sheep is just wayward, just wanders off. It's appetite-driven. A coin is just hard. It doesn't even know it's lost. Doesn't even know, but still it is sought after because it is valued and then celebrated once it's recovered. Son, well, he goes off on his own. He takes his inheritance before his father has died. And he leaves and he goes and he squanders it. Still, the father wants him back home. The older brother is at home and doesn't know and hasn't participated in the intimacy that is rightfully his. Wow. Where are you today? Where are you today with God? God is making a statement in this work on the cross. He's making a statement to you that he wants you and I to spend some time reflecting on. That is that we sit down and maybe look at the verses again that are on your bulletin insert. And you spend time interacting with him and you pray these back to him. Maybe you personalize them by putting your name in those particular verses. Maybe you say, you know, I know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that I was redeemed from my empty way of life handed down to me from my parents and from everybody else before me, but it was by your blood, Jesus. Lord, I know that your arm is not too short to save me, nor your ear dull. Actually, you hear me just fine. It's my sins can separate me from you. Just take these verses and just start to personalize them. Start to mull these things over, and it will prepare your heart for Resurrection Sunday in a profound way. This is good news. Jesus paid the price so that you could be brought back into his very own family. Amen? Let's stand.